the idea of thinking about robotics as the car industry of the 21st century, and that helps in understanding how big and widespread the industry could be and how many support sectors and technologies could flourish underneath the robotics umbrella.
Welcome to Future Skills, where we prepare you for a future of accelerating change. I'm Ludvig Sundström.
And I'm Mikael Syding. Today we're going to talk about the ultimate career and industry, the auto industry of the 21st century, robotics.
Why do you say that robotics is the new auto industry?
Because this is where everything converges. It's the ultimate cognitive challenge for lateral thinkers of numeric and engineering interest.
What the hell is this?
Okay, do you think a lot of money will be made here too?
Oh, yes, definitely. And that goes both for workers and investors, owners of companies. And, well, for the consumers as well. The reason is that automation, it makes use of the most supportive future-proof industries, and it's needed for similarly future-critical areas. AI, biotech, nanotech, and more. And we're talking about industries like space mining, space defense, food production, energy production. But we will talk more about all of these. And at the same time, self-driving cars, they are robots already.
Okay, so it's like you're thinking that this is, how do I put it? You have all these industries that are coming together into one new sort of massive super industry.
Rather than just thinking of a lot of separate industries and trying to understand how they will develop, if you start with framing it as coming together in the robotics industry, then you can understand which parts and which subsectors could flourish in that environment, in the future environment, because they are part of the mega industry, robotics.
Okay, so in this episode and also in the next episode that we do, it's going to be very, very heavy on information and technology. This is an expert that you have been studying for, I don't know how long, but like more than 10 years.
Yeah, I would say before the start of the century. Almost 20 years, or let's say 20 years.
Yeah, so a very long time. And this is very informative. And just to put that at like a backdrop or a preparation.
Yeah, exactly. So for example, I read the book Engines of Creation by Eric Drexler. I read that in the 1990s. And that set me off thinking about these kinds of futuristic industries that's centered on very small nano robots. But it also set me off thinking about automation in general.
Right. So, we're going to cover a lot of information. And one thing that I would like to ask, kind of a difficult question, but that I would like to ask is, we've been thinking about, these futuristic topics, that the future will be radically different for, I don't know how long, it's like a general theme of mankind. But what kind of time frame would you put as in having this massive big industry converging?
You tend to be too optimistic in these cases. But I would say that in about 10 years, I expect people to have something that's more similar to the robots we think of. And I think it has already started, of course, with vacuum cleaners, robotic vacuum cleaners.
Right, the ones that like go around when...
And then the next step is self-driving cars, even though people will not think about those as robots. And then I think what we see in the military and Boston Dynamics and their various big dog robots and cheetah robots and things like that, I think in about 10 years, we will see those kinds of machines migrating into ordinary households. But they will be expensive, luxurious, and an item for high status, a little bit like an expensive sports car. But I would expect that to happen in about 10 years.
Okay, so before we continue, what is Boston Dynamics?
It's a company, it's a defense company that makes robots for military use mainly. It was bought by Google, but I'm not sure if Google is selling it. It used to be a standalone company and then Google bought it. And what they do is robots for the military. So for carrying stuff and for going places where humans can't go because of, for example, radiation.
All right, so you mentioned that robots might become status symbols. How do you see that happening?
To start with, if it becomes more and more common to use self-driving cars, I think that that might reduce the status of owning a car and driving a car. And therefore, there's a need. There it opens up like a vacant spot for a status symbol. And sure, you have watches, they will probably be kept around, and you have big boats, but those are very difficult to show off, and they are also extremely expensive. They are only for the absolute top wealthy persons. But robots have the potential of being that $10 to $100K item that you keep around the house, that can serve as a butler or a cleaner. Or
I would like to have one of those.
Do you have you seen the Rocky IV movie?
Yeah, yeah.
It's from 1984, I think.
Yeah, I remember that, in the kitchen.
Yeah, and Rocky was extremely wealthy. I think that was the idea of the movie, in the beginning at least.
And it's like with his friend Paulie and the robot, right?
Yeah, so he lives in this big house, he's very wealthy, and he also has a robot. and that's like the ultimate status symbol. And that was in 1984, so it's a little bit prematurely. But I think the vision was correct. It was just that you couldn't really make robots yet.
What the hell is this?
Since you don't have any friends, we thought you'd like it.
Yeah, pretend you're happy, will you? It'll keep you company when you're all alone.
There's a concept here that you've mentioned, which is robotics as a service. What does that mean?
It's a little bit of a fad calling everything as a service. So you have, I don't know, you even have washing machines as a service. But the concept is to...
subscription model.
Yes, exactly. So it's a subscription model. Or leasing. I mean, you lease cars, but you never called it cars as a service. But today you would. And this is the same idea. If the robot is too expensive to buy upfront or pay for upfront, you lease it, and the company can call it robotics as a service, and that would get investors going, and the valuation
is like
skyrocketing. Yeah,
right. But underneath that buzzword, do you see this happening?
No, I haven't really seen it yet. Definitely not in the consumer space, and I'm not sure what's going on in the industrial robots space. I actually think that most robots are sold maybe with vendor financing, but not really leased out. But I really don't have any idea, and I'm mainly focused on the consumer robot potential here, and that's what I see going the way the auto industry did, and that's what will happen in about 10 years.
Okay, so
there are already a lot of industrial robots, of course, and they have been around since the 70s.
Yeah, but like the problem is to get it to the consumer and make it immerse in society, make it a normal thing.
Yeah, since they will be so expensive, something will have to happen in order to make them profitably and make consumers really want to have these and spend money on them and show them off.
Yeah, okay, so I'm with you, and I think I understand what you mean. But let's consider, what sort of robots are we talking about here? What sort of functions will they fulfill in society?
One place where they are already gaining some use is in elderly care. They could get things for an elderly person, and they can prevent them from falling. They can prevent them from walking in the middle of the night because they can predict what's going on. They can also be companions. There are these small seal cub robots that are just a little bit cuddly, but also can make noises or even talk, and they have a face and can make some facial expressions. So I think in elderly care, which is midway between industrial use and consumer use, that's where we're already seeing this happening. And in the next step, I expect them to be some kind of a butler-like person. Butler-like function, a little bit like in Rocky, actually.
And I remember a couple of months ago, our first episode of Future Skills Podcast, when we talked to Martin Sandqvist, and he mentioned his sex robot theory. That was also funny. So maybe they will do that too.
Yeah, I went to CIMA. With Ola Alvarsson and Epicenter. And one of the world's best sex robot inventors were there. Oh. And he presented his robot. And you only got to see the face. but she was pretty hot. And she had a natural gaze and way she. Of blinking. It was definitely she. usually the porn and sex industry, they are typically ahead of the time in all things technology. They were the pioneers within video and photography, and they always want to make things as lifelike as possible and get the interaction right between humans and the technology. So I expect them to be first here too.
Sex makes the world go around.
Yeah, well, without it, we wouldn't be here.
All right. So let's look at some other, like, more technical aspects. What kind of sort of human functions could these robots fulfill, either by themselves or serving as, like, a supplement? I'm thinking about things like vision and touch.
So there are a lot of things that really need to become a lot better for robots to be able to fulfill this role as a butler. So as you said, vision and touch are difficult things. And we also have, like, they have had problems getting mobility and balance right. And then there is the question of communication. How do you talk naturally to a robot and get it to talk in a natural way back without you having to use a lot of signal words? I mean, you don't want to say, "Okay, Google Glass," every time you do something.
It's like a sci-fi movie.
it's awful. You never want to do that. You want it to be to understand when you're talking to it and not just talking out loud. And then there is sensing in general. So you have to have sensors. You want it to be able to predict things, either that it sees that something is about to hit it, so it can prepare and brace itself. So the balance system doesn't have to be as good, since it already knows how to counteract whatever it's going to hit it, rather than wait for it to hit. But there are a couple of good systems for this that I've seen, that they simulate 100 things a second and simulate the robot's countermeasure 100 times per second. So it knows what will be the 1 in 10,000 best answer to what's going to happen before it's happened.
Okay. I don't know if we're going to talk about this in this episode or maybe the next. You can decide that. But how do you see this sort of thing that you're talking about with the sophisticated robot butler thing? Compared to what you've been talking about in many of our other episodes, which is like an intelligent agent, I think you call it.
Oh, yeah. I think the intelligent agents, they are a bit off still. Just to make it clear what we're talking about, what I mean when I talk about intelligent agents, it's kind of a software copy of my own behavior. So a software that gradually learns what I usually do and what kind of decisions I usually take. And then it becomes gradually more and more independent and gets to take these decisions without my involvement at all. It would be very good if you could implant this type of agent in a physical robot, and I think that will definitely be done over time, but I expect it to be perfected as a software agent first, and probably will keep being beta tested as a purely software based agent for several years before you let it loose in a physical robot, and not least because physical robots, it will take probably longer than even I expect before they are agile enough and good enough to actually move around in the real world. They are pretty clumsy so far.
So the way that I imagine that is like having a perfect right-hand man who is up all day long, never sleeps, and just knows what you want and is really dutiful and good all the time.
Yes, imagine like a clone of yourself or your best friend, but who's awake all the time and keeps finding information, thinking about what would be the best decision and how that would fit into what you usually do. And then he just presents his best ideas. I mean, maybe you meet your best friend a couple of hours a week, and then sometimes you think you get so good ideas from him. And imagine having him around all the time, and he never sleeps, never drinks alcohol, never wastes time. What kind of good ideas would you get from him then?
So it's like being a VC almost. Everyone can be like a VC with ideas pitched to them all day, and they have to just choose.
Yeah. Definitely easier if you get all the pitches all the time for free.
Let's talk a little bit more about these different robots, the robot butlers again. I'm thinking, let's assume this is going to happen in 10 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have someone who is young and studying or in the beginning of their career. How can they get into this?
I think you could get into it almost any way you like. You can study psychology or design or engineering or physics or mathematics. You could really study more or less anything. So what I would say is that take an interest you have somewhere that you can be long-term oriented or you already are, and you combine this with some kind of a formal education or a direction within one of the technologies that we have talked about.
Okay. So the way I understand it is that you take your favorite area, like a hobby, and then you combine it with a supportive technology that you can use in robotics.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good way of putting it. So for example, start if you want to craft the perfect career in robotics, just break it down. Think of all the separate parts of robots. Like, just break it down physically. You have fingers, you have skin, you have touch, you have muscles, you have arms, you have actuators, which is really just some kind of small motors that make things move, sensors and tools and all kinds of subsystems that we talked about earlier in terms of motion, balance, vision, touch, smell, etc. And then just figure out which of these systems do you think are too clumsy today? Which ones are too, and where do you find that you spontaneously actually have ideas for improvement? I get that all the time just by watching videos of robots. I can see that. Why don't they use that balance ball technology that they use? Why don't they put that in the fingertips? And you would have like rolling fingertips that could better understand if the thing you're holding is slipping or not.
Right, but that's pattern recognition. I mean, on your part, it's not so easy to do it like that when you're beginning. So, because you've been at it for like 20 years. So, how would you do it from scratch? How would you get into it?
Well, one good way would be to map and visit all the local robotics companies that you have in your vicinity, in your city. Well, hopefully it's not too small of a city, but maybe you have to go visit some larger city in that case. But just look through the yellow pages or the whatever you have, and find companies that are into any kind of automation. I think it's easier to search for automation than robotics.
So that's like the key word to kind of look for.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's really step one. But then I also
kind of like Warren Buffett back in the day going through that. I don't remember what it was. Was it the phone book that he went through and he just looked at all the companies and he looked at their valuations and stuff?
I don't remember that, but it doesn't sound too far off.
Yeah.
Too far fetched. But so that's one way. Another way is to watch sci-fi movies or read sci-fi books. You will get interesting ideas, and if you just prime yourself to think about whether it's likely or if it's useful and if it's good enough. I mean, people don't like to think, but if you actually just stop and think about it for a couple of minutes, think actively. And then I think most people will actually get ideas for improvement and try to find companies that are already doing this. And if you can't find those companies, then there could be a niche for you. I'm not saying that you should start your own company, because that's a high threshold. But what you should do is try to visit robotic and automation companies and talk to the owners or the employees about what's going on.
Okay. How about if you buy a small robot?
Yes, that's actually, well, it sounds funny, but it's a good idea. There are these small toy robots which you can program them, and you can just play around with them and see what are they capable of today in terms of communication and mobility, and what would you want to see in them. And maybe you could actually come up with suggestions for the manufacturer, and who knows what will happen then. Maybe they'll hire you.
What does a small robot like that cost?
I don't really know, but I expect a couple of $100, maybe just $100. All right, to summarize, in the interest of time, the main idea here is that robotics is a framework of thinking about future technologies and future industries and jobs. So what you want to do is see if your interest or your skills or your education or your hobby, if they can somehow be matched to a supportive industry to robotics. It could be anywhere in terms of design or engineering or the areas where the robots are supposed to fix a problem. So just think, well, the mindset really of the day is robotics. Think about robotics, whatever you do, and see if you can fit yourself into that framework.
I would also like to add that what I've gained from both this episode and from talking to you about this kind of thing other times is the whole big picture thing of thinking about all of these different industries coming together into some sort of massive converging point. We don't have a name for it, but like you were saying, robotics might be like the new auto industry, where you used to have all these different separate parts, and then it became, you know, a car. But before we had cars, it wasn't really a concept, but it could be something like that.
Exactly. And I also think that the idea of thinking about robotics as the car industry of the 21st century, that helps in understanding how big and widespread the industry could be and how many support sectors and technologies could flourish underneath the robotics umbrella. It's a little bit like that movie The Graduate, where the graduate got the suggestion to go into plastics.
That's the Dustin Hoffman guy, right?
Yes. So go into plastics. That's where the future lies.
So let's wrap it up. For everyone who subscribes to our newsletter, we will send out a little bonus there with 5 different future industries. And we'll talk more about that in the next episode. The next episode will be about different future industries. And then coming up will be an interview that we do where we talk to the futurist Martin Ford, who is the author of Architects of Intelligence.
Great. That wraps it up. And let's also give a big thanks to Alexander Martin, who edits this episode.
Yes, thanks, and thank you for listening.